myself, my name is Jan Fall, and I'm a parent educator. That's what I've done most of my professional life is work with parents with kids of all ages. And I have three young adults myself, so I've survived the teen years, and it works out. And they do. It's a developmental period. I don't want us to think that this is an adversarial situation, although it can begin to feel that way from time to time. So what I'm going to do is give you just a few facts, but also I want you to understand teenagers and their development, but I also want you all to know that you need to take care of yourself during the teen years. You have to, when your kids are going through the teen years, because you have to do a lot of self-talk. It's like, I'm okay. You know, I'm a successful adult, I've come this far, I continue to do this, I'm not going to take all this personally, because it can get to you, and I'll tell you why. That, first of all, I think what I'll do is give you a brief description of the developmental process, and so I think you'll understand where teenagers come in better if you have this picture. And I like to do it in the context of baking cookies. So if you're a parent of a newborn and you're baking cookies, you know that if your baby starts to cry, you have to give up cookie baking and tend to your baby. That you've got to feed your baby, hold your baby, tend to your baby, satisfy all your needs, and then the baby will, you know, return to contentment and you can get back to your cookies. So then, if you have a toddler, they, unless they're taking a nap, they like you best and they want to be right by your side while you're baking cookies. And they want to, quote unquote, help you bake the cookies. And so they might like to do a little stirring. Now I think I will have to stand up because more people are coming in. Come on in. I'm just giving a little picture of development here. And so the toddler wants to do a little stirring. And then, however, the toddler might want to have the notion or the idea that they want to put some detergent into your cookie batter. And so, of course, you're going to say no and take that detergent away. And then this cute little toddler who's been standing next to you is going to erupt, right, into a temper tantrum because up to now you've indulged him as a baby. So then you'll deal with the temper tantrum, and that's what toddlers do about 3 to 5 a day. And so then once children get into the preschool years and you're baking cookies with your children, your preschooler, they really like you and they really like to help. And if you fill up a cup with flour, they're just so happy to dump it in the bowl. And they're helping in their own special way. And then, of course, what you'll see them do after that is reenact the cookie baking process through pretend play. They bring it into their mind and understand it through pretend play. And then once you get into the school years, there's a huge shift in the process because the child during the school years wants to be in charge of cookie baking, and you become a mentor to their success. And so if they're baking cookies, you're going to say something like, that large T on the recipe stands for a tablespoon, and that small T stands for a teaspoon. So you're going to give them information, but they want to have the feeling that they're accomplishing this task for themselves. And it's a great period for parents because your children listen to you, they still like you, and they kind of hang on every word, and they still are kind of in this worshiping relationship with you. And then all of a sudden, the teen years hit, and your teenager's job, their task, is to separate from you, because they see looming on the horizon the fact that in a few years they'll be away from you and expected to be on their own. And the drive for independence actually starts in infancy, but it's very, very clear by the teen years that kids, while they can be polite from time to time and listen to you, they really want to figure out the world on their own. And so, it happens at a hard time because despite the fact that they want to be independent, they still need you very much. But they can't let you know that because they wouldn't be doing their developmental homework if they said to you, "Oh, Mom and Dad, I just appreciate so much the fact that you just reviewed American banking with me so that I won't, you know, overdraw on my debit card. They are not going to do that. Nevertheless, you still need to tell them the real facts about the real world, about banking and fees and all of that kind of stuff. But what you parents have to get over is that they're not going to say, thank you for that information. I appreciate it so much. In fact, they'll probably question you. They'll probably say, I already knew that. Or they'll say, well, my teacher told us that already, or whatever. They just wouldn't be doing their homework if they said how much they appreciate your knowledge. But what one of my messages, my strong messages to you, is nevertheless, say it anyway, whatever it happens to be. What I see, because I've taught parent education for many, many years, and what I see quite often with parents in my classes is that parents have lost their courage to speak up. And so if there's something on the television that you feel is not with your values, or if you see that doesn't agree with your values, or if your teenager is doing something that you feel is not what is acceptable in your eyes, say it anyway. Let them know where you stand on a topic. And then be done with it. And give it to them in a short sound bite. Just don't expect them to agree. They've heard it. They are taking it in. They will process it. They might quote you the next day. They'll process it through their teachers, through the internet, through their friends. But they at least need to hear where you stand. If your 14-year-old were standing right here, none of you are in the room, and your 14-year-old is standing right here, and I said to your 14-year-old, how do your mom and dad feel about teenagers having sex in high school? What would your teenager say? Would they say, I don't know, they've never told me a thing, I haven't heard from them about that subject. Or would they say, well, they don't think it's a very good idea. You know, I hope that they know where you stand. On the other hand, if I said, well, how do your peers feel about it? Oh, they think it's an okay, they go along with it. Or what does the media say? Well, media says it's an okay thing to do too. So my point is, you've at least got to get your third in, because there's some really strong influences that are pulling your kids in different directions. And so, you know, you've got to muster up the courage to let your kids know where you stand on many, many topics as they move out into the world, into ever-expanding environments. And so that's another thing I'd like to address briefly, is that it's a complicated world out there, and the human person is different than other animals in that we have a very, very long period of dependency. Cats, rats, lizards, and mice, all the lower animals, of course, rely on instinct and reflex, and they live in very simple environments. And so cats, you know, leave their parents at 3 months. You know, we may be a little jealous of those cats from time to time. But anyway, they do that. They can do that because they rely on instincts and reflexes, and they live in a very simple environment. Well, human children are far different. We don't rely on instinct and reflex. And we rely on the fact that we have a very good brain that's adaptable to many, many, many different environments. But because we live in a very complicated world, children need this long period of dependency so that they can eventually figure out how to maneuver all of these different environments in which we expect them to be successful in. You know, it starts from, if you watch a baby, their first environment is the home, and then if they're on the move, you can see that their whole job is to figure out how to maneuver successfully throughout the house. And then it's the neighborhood, and then it's preschool, childcare, elementary school, middle school, high school, off to college. But then there's so many other environments. They have to learn how to be successful in religious environments, in theaters, in shopping malls, in banking industry, grocery stores. I mean, there's how to manage yourself in family situations. There's many things that children need to learn how to do to be successful, which is totally separate from academics, right? How to impact those environments. So just the environments that your teenagers will be entering that they and managing on their own far different from what they've ever managed before as when they were younger kids. Can you think of any of the things that they might be doing?
A job.
A job, definitely. They may take on a job, and so, you know, they need to hear from you and from others about how to be successful in the work situation. Okay, what else?
Driving.
Okay, that's a biggie. That's, you know, that's really important. That's a safety issue, and, you know, I'll never forget the time when my son, his birthday is the end of August, and so we held him back when he went off to kindergarten, and he went off when he was six. And when he was, so I always liked my kids to drive because I knew they were really good drivers. And when he was in high school, he was going to be a senior. They were going on a camping trip and whatever that involves. Anyway, so I'll never forget my husband said to him, and it was a soundbite of information. He looked at him as he's going out the door and he said, Jerry, I know that you will not drink and drive, but I want you to know that if your friends in the car have open containers of alcohol, that that's against the law, and you are responsible for that situation. I wish I had the picture of the look on his face. It's like, I know I'm not gonna drive, but I gotta be in charge of these guys that are going along with me. But that was a very powerful piece of information, right? How long did that take me to say? Less than 30 seconds, right? But those are the kinds of pieces of information that kids can take in. So, okay, so we've got job, cars, what else did we say?
Dating.
Pardon?
Dating,
yeah, absolutely. What's going to happen in that scene, okay? What else?
Finance,
absolutely. Okay, what else? Other kinds of environments.
Parties,
yeah, okay. Those are camping trips, you know. Okay, anything else that you can think of? I mean, there's many, but you think about it, and every time your child enters one of those environments, they need some information. And one of the things, you know, how many of you do have teenagers right now? Okay, and many of you don't, but I wish that everybody at Holden would come to this because your children don't like you parents, they like other adults. See, and they're like, here tonight. They will go to another adult, and we hope it's a Holden or some, you know, somebody, a pastor or a counselor or a teacher or somebody who will mentor them because they can support them quite often when our kids are turning away from us. And so that's why we want to get them on the road to being around, you know, adults that we respect and that we know will look out for our kids. Okay, so that's a good one to think about is, oh, I wanted to tell a story. And when my daughter was in high school, she was a senior, and she was going to go, we lived in Renton at the time, and she was going to go to an event at the Seattle Center. You know, they do it. And so she graduated, you know, she was going off to college, she was, you know, a responsible young woman, and so she was all excited about, I think it was a concert or something that she and a couple of girlfriends were going to, and of course, you know, most of the day she was doing her nails and getting her hair and picking out an outfit and talking on the phone and all that. And so finally I said to her, I said, Anna, do you know how to get there? And she says, you know, I've been thinking about that. Now, I know there's two freeways, and there's one that kind of goes up by Bellevue, but I think eventually you could end up at the Seattle Center. Or there's another way. She basically had no idea. Okay? I mean, this was a new environment, right? That she, and I, you know, my first child, I didn't, you know, I'd only been teaching parent education for about 15 years at the time. But anyway, so then I started thinking, so I said, Anna, have you thought about parking? Oh, hadn't thought about parking, right? And then, have you thought about money for parking? Haven't thought about that either. And so if we as parents can think, you know, okay, this is a new environment and can offer, ask them some questions as to how they think they're going to successfully manage this new environment, we're probably helping them on the road to successful independence. One of the things I was reading today, I have to put in a plug. None of you probably are interested in this book, but I just wrote a new book called Amazing Minds, and it's about infant and toddler cognitive development. And in Scientific American this month, there's an article about how babies think. But in this article, it's especially long time to mature. The adult capacities for focus, planning, and efficient action that are governed by this brain area depend on this long learning that occurs in childhood. This area's wiring may not be complete until the mid-20s, okay? And that's where teenagers fool us, because their bodies, I want to shift in and talk just a little bit about development right now, that girls sexually develop first and then boys are a little later. And when they do go through puberty, they are ready to procreate, right? And so we need to tell them why that would not be a good idea. A long time earlier, right? Between the time they're 6 and 12, because they still like us then. Remember that? Okay, and so, anyway, so I lost my train of thought where I was going with this. Just that, their bodies are fully developed, right? And so they fool us because we think, well, he looks like a mature young man, or she looks like a mature, you know, smart, intelligent, and in many ways they are. But please don't let it fool you, because they don't have judgment and experience. This part of the brain is not developed yet, and that's the higher functioning part of the brain. And that's why they still need parents, and they still need adults who can mentor them and support them on their road to independence. So physically they're changing. Obviously their bodies are changing. Emotionally, typically, teenagers are on an emotional roller coaster. They can be, you know, thoughtful and planning. And, I mean, my daughter, seriously, in high school, she was the editor of the school yearbook. I mean, that takes a lot of work. And she would be charming and helpful. And then she would come in the door and scream and yell because I had had one of her Coca-Colas that day. Why did she think it was her Coca-Cola? Because we were at the grocery store and she said, "Mom, can we buy some?" And I said, "Okay." And she took it from the shelf and put it in the cart. And then she thought those were hers. And then the next day I thought, "Well, I'll have a Coke," and drank it, and she was furious. So it's this up and down that I think is really hard on us as parents. And one time I was reading in a child development book, it said that if people behaved as they do when they're toddlers and teenagers at any other time in their life, they would be institutionalized. Basically, I don't mean this disrespectfully to the teenagers in the room, but basically you're living with a person who's kind of crazy from time to time. And so when they're out of control with emotion, they need us to be in control. And I think that's the hardest for us, because quite often they attack us, because remember, they're separating from us. And so we're the easiest person to take their frustrations out on. And so when you think about that, when you think about your teenager, you don't want to judge them or think or worry about them by how they behave in the home. Consider their level of sanity by how they behave outside the home, because you're going to get all the frustrations of the day targeted quite often from you because they know you'll always love them, and because they're doing this drastic separation from them. Okay, so let's think, before I go on, I'll go on and just describe a little bit more about their development. The other thing, of course, is that they are, their minds are expanding tremendously. They're not finished till the mid-20s, but intellectually, their mental ability is expanding. We know this because they can learn algebra and geometry, and they learn about poetry and metaphors and all that, those complicated subjects in school. They want to have heated discussion with you, and I encourage you to do that with your kids when they bring something up that you, it's actually one of the only ways you can bond with your teenagers, by having these heated discussions. They'll question your values. It's okay. The research tells us that kids in their mid-20s, 85 to 90% of children in their mid-20s come back to take on the values of their parents. They're tweaked a bit for their generation. So you have this, that's something you have to tell yourself over and over when your kids are rebelling or when your kids are, you know, badgering you with, you know, you're so silly to think that way, and you have to say, this will pass, I'm okay, keep my focus. Okay, also, so anyway, their mental ability is expanding. They can hold jobs, fix dinner, talk about the environment, talk about abstract concepts. They will question your ideas, have these heated discussions, because they do need to hear from you. But just to understand, as I said, that their mind is not fully developed until they're 20, so watch your expectations. Socially, children or teenagers are clearly attaching to their peers, more so than ever. And sometimes we wish they could sidestep this, that they would just go from being kids, young children, to all of a sudden being full-functioning, independent adults on their own. It doesn't happen that way. Peers bridge that gap. They need to cling to their peers so that they can eventually stand on their own as full-functioning, competent adults. And so we hope, of course, and when they're younger, we try to influence them towards positive peers. It doesn't always happen that way. But just to understand, that's a very, very strong need with kids, with teens. And they have, you know, also superficial forms of conformity. They want to dress a certain way, have a certain hairstyle, because that differentiates them from you and also helps them connect with their peers. So we want to go along with that, with what's reasonable. Okay, so have we covered all the socially, emotionally, intellectually, and physically? Okay, we've got them all. All right, so with that, I just want to ask, I want to hear from you. And I want to ask you, what are some of your fears and frustrations when you think about raising teenagers or having teenagers in your home? What are your fears or what frustrates you the most? Yes?
I know the things I want for them, but I'm not sure how to convey those to them in a way that won't backfire.
Okay, like what?
Like knowing some of the things, like what your husband said to your son on the way out the door, that happened to work. Like I could say it directly, and that would actually make him more likely to take care of the people in his car rather than less likely to take care of the people in his car. If I think about the actual transmission of stuff, I worry about
right.
the transmission of stuff. We're
sure.
pretty clear about what we want to have happen, but I'm not always sure how to make sure that same thought lands there.
Right, and that's the risk. But also I think that if you think about with teenagers, if it's a real world issue, if it's just to please mom and dad or because it's a really nice thing to do for me because I need your approval, it's not going to resonate with a teenager. But if it's a real world issue, they pick up pretty quickly on that because they do definitely want to be successful in the real world and understand the consequences of their behavior. And, you know, how that will impact not you so much, but the big picture of society. So that's why that was so successful when my husband said that to my son, because it also because he was a DWI attorney. So he knew his business, right? But, I mean, that's the other thing that's so hard about teenagers is that if you... I mean, that was a successful moment. There were many moments that weren't successful. But if you are a mathematician at an esteemed college and your child is having trouble with algebra, you will probably not be the one to tutor your child in algebra. You probably need to hire somebody else. And it's so frustrating when we think about that because... you know, I'm right here, I can help you with it, but they don't want to hear from you. So, I forgot something that I was going through development and then the cookie baking. If your teenager is baking cookies, they don't even want you in the kitchen, right? They don't even care if they burn the cookies. They want to do it themselves no matter what. And that's the hard part of being a parent of a teen. Okay, what else are your fears and frustrations about being parent of a teen?
Screen time,
okay.
Computer, gaming, and TV.
Yeah, I mean, that to me, you know, that's probably your generation of parents is laying you're the pioneers for parents coming along for the next generation because all of those, I mean, TV certainly has been around for a long time, but the screen time, the texting, the all of that that goes along with what it means to be a teenager, the kids having cell phones and all that, the rule books have not been written. You're writing the rule books for the next generation. And, I mean, my personal opinion is that in a home, you know, we're going to talk about entitlement tomorrow, but those are privileges. I mean, just like, think of how I like to think about it is it's like a car that you know, all the time your kids are around, you know, you put them in a car in car seats when they're infants and they learn about the rules of the road and you're at the wheel, right? You're in charge. And then at some point they get a learner's permit and then at some point they learn to drive on their own. Well, I think that's how those screen times should be, that mom and dads are definitely in charge. And it's a privilege that kids can learn to use, and at some point they have then the license to use it on their own. But it's to stay on top of that and to stay ahead of that is really, I mean, it's really difficult. And because they, for some of you, your kids know more about it than you do, and they can figure it out quicker than you can. And so, it just takes a lot of work, and there's a lot of, anybody have any thoughts about that, or how you've managed that in your homes?
We keep him really busy. He does drama, piano, and sports, and then he does, we try to get him into the community activities, and by the end of the night, there's no time left over.
Right, so, and besides, he's exhausted.
Yeah. So sometimes that works really well, and there's other times where he's got us over a glass bowl, and there's nothing we can do about it.
Right.
He's done his responsibilities.
Right, and so, I mean, of course, what you hope, too, is that kids aren't just so busy all the time, because that's another kind. I mean, we want to be able to manage downtime without having to turn on a screen. And, you know, one of the questions I ask parents from time to time is something to think about. What do your kids do when there's nothing to do? I mean, and so that's why, you know, coming to Holden is so great, because they learn how to manage. I mean, there's so many options that are away from screen time and all of that. But I was talking to Tom today, and he said that a young woman came up here, and she had to leave after, I don't know, a day or two, because she didn't have her texting and her cell phone, and she was crying and so upset she just couldn't manage herself, so they had to send her home. I mean, that's an addiction, right? And so that's a whole other thing. But yeah, other fears or frustrations with teenagers, yes?
Just still with the screen time, I had to get over some of my own innate negativity about computer and other things.
Right.
My daughter's an only child, and she does her homework Skyping with her friends, which has been outrageously successful.
Uh-huh.
I'm sure it's not pure efficiency, but
right.
I can't argue with her grades. And, and I realize, I 30 years ago, I was on a princess telephone doing chemistry with my friends.
Right.
And so...
a relic, yeah.
I've learned to be a bit more flexible and to say,
right.
Hey, there's a plus, especially for an only child.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. And I mean, all that technology has many, many positive aspects to it. I mean, you know, most of us use a computer every day and are on email. But one of the things, you know, we think about delaying gratification. I mean, now even with me, you know, I'm on email 3 or 4 times a day. I think, well, I don't have to do that. You know, once a day is plenty. So, okay. Other fears and frustrations, yes.
One of the things that happened, probably a personal thing, is I remember the great respect I have for my father, probably born of fear, and he was hardly involved in my life.
Uh-huh.
And yet, I'm much more involved in my son's life, and he often behaved in a way that's very disrespectful. Obviously, that involves probably lots of unpacking, but I'm not sure. I'm not sure how to deal with that, because I guess that's pretty much a big issue. But what about the different ideas of respect? Because I know most people think of their father, probably, I'm guessing, that they would never treat them that way. And then their kids are much more comfortable treating us a lot of different ways.
Right. Oh, I mean, that's a huge issue. It's very, very good. I mean, when I think back to, I mean, most of us, I mean, how many of you would have talked back to your parents growing up? Let's see those. Well, so what happened? Just to give a little history of that is, I would have never, never, never. I mean, I spoke up to my dad one time when I was 40 years old. They gave my sister $20,000 and they didn't give it to me, and I asked him why, and he was so mad at me. Anyway, that's another story. But anyway, but then what we realized that children, we want to hear from children, and we want to know their feelings and what they're thinking, and we want to know what's going on with them. And so then what, and I've had parents laugh at me when I say this, but what I see it as is a lack of refinement of verbal skills. So if a child says to you, I need my allowance right now, it's late, and I can't believe it, I've got a plan, and you don't have any cash, and my debit card is just, and there's no money in there, and I'm mad. So that's disrespectful, right? It's angry, it's, you know, accusatory, all of those things, and it's a poor use of language skills. On the other hand, if your teenager or your child comes up to you and says, you know, Mom, I am so frustrated. I'm going to the movies tonight. You promised me my allowance on Friday night. That's in our contract. And my friends are waiting for me, and there's no cash in the house, and I am really, really frustrated. So you said the very same thing, right? Mm-hmm. But one's disrespectful, and one isn't, and it's a, you know, it's a lack of refinement of verbal skills. The problem with teenagers is that because of what's going on in their life and all the changes and pressures that they feel, a lot of their, even if those skills had been in place prior to being a teenager, they lose a lot of them temporarily when they get into the teen years again. And so, you know, my personal feeling is, as a parent educator and a parent, is that we need to teach children how to speak respectfully to people, but to understand it takes a long time to do that. But then also, I think that we do have to give teenagers a little slack because I think of the, because of the pressures. We're not only looking, I think respect between parents and children is very, very important, but we're also working on another thing, which is good mental health. And I think it's better that your children can tell you what's on their mind, even if it's not so pretty, so we know what's going on. And in time, hopefully, they will come back and refine those skills again. Any other feelings about that? Oh, I'd like to see these hands up. Go ahead. I want to hear from Addison.
So a lot of times, like, when I'm really frustrated or something, and I'll tend to be disrespectful to my parents, it's because I feel like they don't understand what I'm going through. Because mm-hmm. people all the time say that our generation has just been so different and so, you know, moving and technology and all of that. Mm-hmm. So it feels like, well, everybody's telling us we're really different. Uh-huh. It feels like in parenting we're not really trying, or to us it doesn't seem like it's trying that hard to accommodate to it. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like, oh, well, when I was a kid, you know, my dad would tell
right.
me and I wouldn't do nothing about it. But, you know, now it's like, oh, well, we're given all these new ideas and new concepts, and it feels like it's kind of hard to adjust to that. So a lot of times it's easier to, like, talk to your friends because they have they're, like, on the same level as you.
Sure. So you feel parents provoke you sometimes to kind of be disrespectful because they don't understand where you're coming from. Okay, that's a really good perspective. Thank you. Yeah. Okay. I saw a couple other hands. Yeah.
I was thinking about the difference between picking battles, which is fine, and then when you just blow up because you can't handle it anymore.
With kids, you mean?
Yeah, with kids.
Yeah.
And how to handle, like how you handle or just navigate those times when, you know what, 6 days out of the week, you blow off a lot of stuff, but then uh-huh. on day seven,
yeah.
either you've been disrespected or enough things come up,
right.
and usually let those things go, but on today, for whatever reason,
right.
you know, you're
yeah.
louder, you're more angry, and it freaks
yeah.
them out.
Absolutely.
So
you're inconsistent too.
Yeah.
So as a parent, you try always to be consistent.
Right.
And all of a sudden, you're this inconsistent parent who's probably just ruined their life.
Yeah.
So,
but you didn't do it on purpose.
Okay.
You
know,
so just addressing
yeah.
that issue
yeah.
of anger, I mean, I'm going to talk about anger on Friday, and I know a lot of people will be gone by then, but Also, before you all leave, and while I'm thinking about it, I do have handouts here. I have one handout. And so if you want handouts, what I'm asking people from me to email me, and I'll send them to you in a Word document. And the reason I bring that up is because John Gottman, who's the, how many of you know who John Gottman is? Several of you, good. He's the guru of emotion coaching. He's from the University of Washington. And I don't think I can quote it verbatim. And I have the quote up in my chalet, and it's not here because I use it when I talk about anger. But anyway, basically what he says is that when you're angry, and you will get angry at your children, and a lot of it, you know, which what I think is so interesting is that it's usually, you know, you go along through your day, and you're managing the situation in that situation, and all of a sudden, I mean, I remember my son coming in, and, you know, I'd worked all day, and I'm fixing dinner, and I've got to get him to church for confirmation, and he says, you know, he's like, when are we going to eat? I'm hungry, and we got to get to church for confirmation class, and I'd been cool all day, just managing everything, and I turned on the guy, and I said, well, if you set the table, then we could eat quicker. where did that come from? And I've read all this stuff. I've taken classes on anger for 25, 30 years, and it still erupts. It just gets you. And so anyway, what John Gottman says is that if you are angry and can communicate your frustrations and anger to your children, not using contempt, which is, this is the worst thing anybody could ever do, or sarcasm, oh great, there you go again, you know, that kind of, or derogatory comments, you slob, I mean, without using any of those, okay, if you can communicate your anger, not attacking their character, but keeping it focused on what they've done that's provoked your frustration, keep engaged. Tell them what's on your mind. Let them tell you what's on your mind, and then get back and tell them again what's on your mind. If, on the other hand, you are so angry that you're going to use contempt, derogatory remarks, or sarcasm, hit the child or insult the child, retreat and come back to the situation when you feel less aroused. So, that's basically, but again, it takes work because there's something about us that it's almost cathartic. And I worry about, you know, because sometimes it is a buildup from, you know, Monday we got through it and Tuesday, and then, but it builds up over the week, and then by Friday you just have to say I'm sorry. The thing that's hard about that, I mean, anger is a whole other big topic, but the thing when you blow up like that and you're embarrassed and you've said things you don't mean and all of that stuff, then you apologize, which I want you to do, but then the issue is typically lost because you've apologized. Your child came in at 1 rather than midnight. You screamed and yelled at them for doing that, and so then you apologize, and then the issue, which was coming in late, is forgotten because you're the problem because you blew up at your child. And so that's why, you know, we got to work on our anger all the time, but teenagers can provoke it. They can. So, yeah.
So I like what you said about retreating if you can't take it. What do you do when you have a child that is pursuing?
Yeah, and you need to leave. I mean, you really need to get away. And to say, you know, I am willing to discuss this with you anytime when you're being respectful and when I'm less aroused. But yeah, you really need to get away because, but I know those kids that they come up with these arguments and they follow you around the house, and truly we're raising the best generation of negotiators the world's ever known, and we're gonna need them. But it's wasted on us rather than other areas. Yes.
What about cheating? I've just heard that it's much more of a problem in schools or in life, and how do you deal with it? Getting that across to you.
Yeah, you mean cheating at school?
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, that's, I don't know, you know, it's interesting because I wrote an article one time on cheating, and I talked to some teachers about it, and they, and I, you know, I'm not sure what is your situation is, but they really felt that it wasn't such a big problem, that you really learn from each other by sharing information as you're learning. I don't know if it's about testing. Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah, mostly.
Yeah. You know, I anybody know about an answer to that question? Because it's really not my expertise, that kind of school
Well, it may not be like cheating on a test, but integrity issues when it comes to pulling papers off the internet and then sending them and blurring them as an example. That's where the technology comes
in. Okay, absolutely.
That may be part of the cheating ideas, more of integrity issues.
But, right.
Know, it's so hard to do that now because of the programs that the schools have to be able to go in and check for that.
Uh-huh.
It's just almost impossible for kids to get away
but
with it.
But they're tempted really, is what I'm saying.
Sure, but maybe that's a lesson.
Yeah, I mean, though, you know, I'll get your question in just a minute, Asit. That, I mean, those are some of the things, too, and one of these days, I think it's Thursday, I talk about virtues, values, and morals, but how you know, that's an integrity issue, as you said, and there's so many of those, and yet that is our job as a parent to communicate those integrity issues to children, and what I say about that, and what I will continue to say on Thursday, is the ages that you teach those issues most effectively is between 6 and 12. And see, a lot of times we wait until the teen years because that's when they come up. But most of your work, again, really takes place between 6 and 12. And why?
Because they still like you.
Addison, you had a comment.
Well, I mean, I had a friend, and he did that. He just took something right off a book or a website, and that year I had a really smart teacher, so she just typed in one sentence of it on Google, was able to get to the website that he got it off of,
mm-hmm.
printed off the paper, and she was the nicest teacher ever, just kind of had a sit down with them, and I was in this group, and I just thought this was the best idea ever. Right?
Yeah.
So after that, though, it was kind of like a slap across the face, mm-hmm. like, hey, dummy, we have the internet, too.
So she was on top of that, and she, again, what I want to point out is that she did that in a real-world way. If she had said, you know, I don't like it when kids, you know, that makes me sad, or I'm displeased with you because, well, okay, well, so what? But by pulling it off the internet and calling it plagiarism or whatever it is, that's much more meaningful to a teenager, and so I applaud her. Yes?
I'm a high school teacher, and I don't know if this is effective. I don't have any evidence, but I tell my kids at the beginning of the year, how many of you would like to have surgery performed by a doctor who cheated on their medical exam?
Yeah.
Or have a mechanic who cheats on repairing your car?
Yeah.
Or any of the other people we rely on to do things for us? Don't all of you want the very best? So why is it that you're willing to cheat in these mundane tests? And I explained that, although they may think, and possibly even make an argument, that cheating on a school test doesn't really matter, I would say it releases you to cheat on bigger things.
Right.
First you cheat on school tests, then you cheat on relationships, then you cheat on Uncle Sam.
Right.
And
yeah. And so now how long did that take you to explain that? No, I mean just right now, 2 minutes, maybe a minute and a half at the most. So that's the kind of sound bite that kids are going to hear. And so, and they need to hear it. But if I'm your child, I'm going to say, oh, Dad, for heaven's sakes, don't worry about it. I'm not going to, you know, whatever. Don't worry. You know, I'm not going to be a medical doctor. I'm not going to be operating on anybody. So, but yet, if I went to school the next day and they were talking about it, I'd probably say, well, here's what I think about. How would you like it if your doctor was see, as a teacher, I'm going to quote you, but I'm not going to say where I got my information, right? Because you're my dad. See, okay. All right. So, what perplexes you? What just really is there anything that just really confuses you about teenagers? Yes.
Being a stepfather of one.
Pardon?
Being a stepdad.
Okay, and so. I'm sure there's other step parents in here, and it's really, really hard. So how long have you been a stepfather to this child?
4 years.
4 years, okay. I mean, basically, there's really good books out there that you can read, and I can help you find some to read. But basically, the basic rule of thumb is your job is to build rapport with that teenager. And then any disciplinary issues the biological parent deals with, unless it's directly something that affected you. So if the
and
teenager...
not to expect gratitude.
Pardon?
And not to expect gratitude.
Now. And, okay. I mean, you can say, thank you very much for taking me to the movie. You know, that kind of... You want to prompt kids, and you want them to call... you to call them on it, but it's just not going to be spontaneous. But if they... Like, say if your stepchild took $10 out of your wallet, then of course you directly go to the teenager about that. But any greater disciplinary issues, the biological parent directs.
Let me just add to that, is raised two of my own biological children.
Yeah.
And did their teenage years. And now I've been blessed with it.
So you have experience. So how different is it for you?
It's different.
Is there anything the two of you really like to do together?
Spend my money.
Okay, great. What do you like about teenagers?
Well, I disagree
talking about the college kids. I teach college. But here's a thing for parents. I always felt bad that my kids wouldn't tell me their intimate secrets of life. And I was sitting in a conversation with about five guys once, and they were telling me, I said, holy cow, I know you guys better than I know my own kids.
Right.
They said, three of them in unison said, you think I'd tell my dad this?
And I think that's, you know, that's a hard thing, I think, for parents. And, you know, what I want you to understand about being the parent of a teenager is that for so long, your children just esteem you so much. They come in the door, you know, third, fourth, fifth grade, sixth grade, just telling you everything that happened in the day. They're so excited. And now they come in the door when they're teenagers and they are texting because they're going to their friends, right? We are not that person. And it's a loss for us. And even to the point where, I remember when my daughter was in high school or middle school, you know, middle school is really harder in many ways, you know, for all of you parents who have middle schoolers. Then you kind of settle in as high school comes along. But they'd say, oh, she's such a wonderful girl, and she's this and that. And I was jealous because I never saw that girl. I saw this angry, stomping around the house, you know, banging doors, and this guy, you know, it's like, when will I get to know her? Well, it took a while for me to get to see that. Yes, what do you appreciate?
I was just thinking that they challenge you to be better because you want to be a good role model for them, and they're, you know, kind of looking up to you, and then they're also challenging you to do new things because they want to try new things, so they say, well, you want to do it with them, so you maybe try some things that you didn't try before when you were a teenager.
Great, yeah, that's good, I like it, okay?
Also, I like the fact that they can make their own lunches and drive themselves places, and that they're self-sufficient in that way.
Yeah, you know, absolutely. They're pretty independent in that way. Yeah. Okay, other things that you like about teenagers? Yes.
As a school bus driver, I really appreciate just how easy it is to get along with kids of all ages when you engage them without any preconception.
Without any preconception.
Yeah, just talk to them as people, regardless of chronologically how old they are and how instantly they respond.
So give us a few skills on how you do that.
Just be wide open.
Okay.
Don't try and censor yourself and say, okay, I'm going to try and be popular with these kids if they do something crazy. Just say, hey, what are you doing? You know, just engaging them sincerely.
Okay. Engaging teenagers sincerely. Okay, good. Anything else that people appreciate about teenagers? Yes.
I appreciate these. They're very insightful.
Insightful.
And internally and externally in ways that I'm not. Because of the view of the world, and it's open and fresh and new, and he brings that to everything.
Yeah, great. Which I appreciate. Before we end, I want to say, what are some of the things that really scare you? What are the red flags that really scare you?
Girlfriends,
okay. And beyond that,
boyfriends.
What else?
Alcohol.
The invincibility, belief in their invincibility.
Right.
That's scary.
Yeah, it's very scary.
They don't have fear where they need to have fear.
Right. Yeah. Okay. Yes.
Again, as a school bus driver, what really scares me about the kids is what their parents teach them.
Really?
Because, you know, parents have, I want not in a condescending way, but a very narrow view of the world through just their kids. As I know a lot of teachers, probably if you're a teacher too, we see the whole spectrum of kids in an instant. You know, I have a given group of kids for at the most an hour every day. But everything comes out, and you can see exactly how their parents talk to them or don't talk to them, and how their parents, I mean, when a kid walks on a bus, you can tell whether their parents are just, that there's nothing there.
Really?
They're just shut down, they're quiet. But
wow.
But you can see kids who are engaged by their parents or their community at large, whatever. There's like, when you say hi to them, they're like, they either recoil from you and think you're just a freak, or they're like, hey, how's it going? And they instantly engage. You know?
Yeah.
So this
is one of those people that we hope our kids meet along the way. As they're separating from us, we hope they have people like this bus driver and other people along the way who will engage with them and support them on their road to development, because we can't do it all, and that's where a community is so important too. So, okay. Anyway, what else scares you? Yeah, in the, let's see, not, there's so many, I haven't heard from you. Go ahead.
It's not a huge major thing, but having an introverted young child going into a world that seems full of extroverted energy.
Right, and yeah, that's so interesting because I walk with my neighbor and she has a son who, there's a temperamental, there's 9 temperamental characteristics, and one of the temperamental characteristics is what we call not shy, but slow to warm up. And some, and in the American culture, the broad-based American culture, kids who are slow to warm up have a harder time because we are a community or a society of extroverts. And so to give a child who's slow to warm the confidence that that's an okay, that's really a very okay place to be. I have one child who's slow to warm and he, you know, he looks around, he assesses the situation before he jumps in and does something. And while there were times in high school, I mean, I remember when he was in high school, I mean, he didn't do one social thing until he was a junior. And finally one day I said to him, Jerry, I said, don't you just kind of want to go to a one football game? He says, no, I like staying home with mom and dad the best. And I'm like, for how long? That it's okay to be that way when, you know, the culture or the school is in situations. Yeah, that's a hard place to be. Okay, so other things, addictions, pornography. What are you scared of?
Getting involved with the wrong group.
With the wrong group, certainly. That, I mean, you know, there's all kids feel a pressure to connect with a peer group. And so it's not like, so if you three are in a peer group, it's not like you're pressuring me to join your group. I'm pressuring myself to find a group. And so it could be you in student government or you in sports or you the bad kids. So, you know, all of us want our children to connect with the positive, productive children that are out there. And again, those things, that ground work is done when kids are between 6 and 12. It's again. And another kind of thing that happens too is that kids quite often connect with their emotional counterparts. So somebody who's shy, or I don't like the word shy, but slow to warm up, may connect with somebody who's very gregarious and outgoing, because then that gregarious person will support the slow to warm child. So yeah, peer issues are, yeah, we want our kids with the right group. Okay, what other kinds of things? Yes.
How to deal with rejection.
Yeah, and they'll all experience it at one time or another. And so, another message that I want to give you as parents is that when your child experiences rejection, you know, the first breakup with the boy or not being included in a peer group or whatever, that so your child comes in and says, you know, I just had my first breakup with a boy and I'm so sad. And you say, well, I wouldn't want you as my girlfriend if you did so and so and so. No, 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 we are not going to do that. Rejection from school and rejection at home is too hard. And so when they feel rejected at school, they need acceptance from you. Home needs to be a place for them where they can relax and debrief too. So I want to mention a few of the really scary things, because I feel a responsibility to do this. If your kids are branding themselves, I don't know if kids do that anymore. Most kids will drink a little bit in high school, but if they're drinking excessively, that's a red flag. If they're sneaking out, I just have to tell you this one story about this girl at our church. She sings, dances, teaches Sunday school to my granddaughters, is the princess of, she's beautiful in every way. I love her. She's going to Western. She's a good student, a likable person. Seeing her parents one day at coffee hour, this girl was sneaking out between 1 and 3 in the morning, and her neighbors caught her. And that's how, what is that about? Where was she going? That's what going to have coffee with a friend at a, I don't know, Denny's all night place. I mean, that's teenagers, you know? And so you think you've got this perfect little teenager, and then something else is going on. They reined her in. Oh, and, but But one thing, and she got back. She, you know, she was off base, but you know, now she's back on track. But that's the kind of things kids do. You think, where in the world is that coming from? Okay, poor grades, excessive poor grades, depression, anorexia, self-mutilation, any kind of addiction, pornography, any kind of those kinds of things. Please, 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 if your kids are involved in that, you cannot be the ones to solve those problems. I don't want to scare you to death, but remember, they're separating from you. And so they need to connect with another adult, a counselor, a pastor, somebody else who can support them and give them what they need, get the help that they need, because you most likely will not be the person to do that. And lastly, to end, because it's 7:15, as I said, your kids are on the road to independence, and if they see you as a conduit, somebody who is supporting them safely on the road to independence, your life with your teenager will be better. If they see you as somebody who's always pulling in the reins, pulling them back, keeping them from the road to independence, you're going to have a much harder time. So, okay, enjoy.